Hello, welcome back to the Mission Darts podcast episode. You said it was 18, but I've labelled this 17. Only I can see this, by the way, and Andy, like no one else can see this, so I don't know why I'm referencing it. But it's 18, above my it? Head right now, it says 17.
So that might come my error. We started off with a bang here, mate, because we don't even know what number podcast it is. But I'm pretty sure if I just have a quick look on the channel. What number was last week's? Last week's was 17. So therefore, it's 18.
Oh, no, what this is, this is 17.2.
Yeah, you can't get out of it like that. It's 18. Do you remember being 18? God, all them things you could do, start drinking and gambling and all the things. No, you don't remember that, mate. Neither do I. But I'm sure it was fun. So how are you?
I'm actually a little bit jealous here, actually. I'm looking at your... For the viewers that can't see this, it looks like you're wearing a slightly blue mission hoodie where I've only got the black ones.
I am. I had racing green on, was it, last week? I've got mission blue on this week. Oh, it's gorgeous. And I'm glad you mentioned that, Isaac, because you don't know this. We might be selling these soon because we've had a few people in the comments go, oh, we're going to get a mission hoodie. You know what I mean? They're so comfy. We wear ours all the time. So I've made inquiries with the people at Beat, and that could be something coming in the New Year mission hoodies. So that's good news. But the good news is I posted yours back out to you yesterday with the logos on. So any day now, you'll have some new colours to go with the lovely black one that you're wearing.
There's a lot of comments from, haven't they? The love for the hoodies.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of love. It's winter, isn't it? No, yeah, you know, you've got your dark shirt on. You want something to chuck over the top. So, yeah. So,
just chill around the house in it, can't you? You know,
feels like we got a lot to talk about this week, Matt. Whew, does
there
it?
There is. Yeah. There's an awful lot to talk about. You know, we've just come off the back of Lakeside. I mean, there's so many topics in there I want to touch on. And do you know at the start we do that coming up bit? I'm going to make this easy for the videographer. Is Lakeside a world championship? That's something we'll be able to talk about. And I've got a real strong debate on this. And
what a tagline that is, Matt. Is Lakeside a world championship? Wow. There's your tagline right there, Andy. 2:52. Bang on. No, but yeah, funnily enough, I've made notes today because there's just so much. But can we please start by saying congratulations, Archie Self, Mission World Champion, World Youth Champion. Fantastic young lad. Massive prospect for the future. Brilliant signing for us. Great kid and so happy for him. Well done, Archie.
Watch the game. He played Jensen Walker, didn't he? It was a good game. I think one of the real key things there for me when watching Archie was his composure.
Mm.
You know, to have the level of composure he had at the key moments. He didn't start well. That first set was weak, and you think, can you turn that around? You know, when you're up there and it's not going well, it's easy to get drawn down that rabbit hole. It's easy to keep struggling. But he found comfort, which means he trusts and believes in his game and trusts and believes in his process. And again, that for me is the biggest out. If he would have gone up there and blown him away and won really quickly and easy, you'd go, wow, it was so good, but it's not as impressive. Like Luke Littler. We watch Luke Littler, and what's so impressive about Luke Littler is he's not just blowing people away. People are serving it up to him. And they're testing him, and he gets better. It's that response, because you're going to get hit back. And that was
how you respond to that, isn't it? Do you fold like a cheap suit, or do you fight back and show your true grit? And and not everybody starts quickly, Matt. So unfortunately, as we know, you didn't. You know, so not everybody starts quickly. So you've got to get into the game, and he did. Brilliant.
It's interesting because I've got a secret guest coming on today as well. And while we're on this topic, this is someone who's going to speak quite heavily on this.
Is it Jan Dekker?
No. Sorry.
Hello, no. Connor.
All right, Andy, how you doing?
That's a nice surprise. How are you, mate?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. That's a lovely surprise. So for those of you listening, Connor Scott's just come on the podcast, which is brilliant. That's a lovely surprise, Matt. I didn't know that was happening.
There's two things to this. First of all.
Okay.
I attempted to get Jan Dekker. I attempted it. I did message, and unfortunately, he declined. Very upsetting news. I was going to get a white blazer and everything, but
brilliant.
Never mind.
He said darts is done for him. He's fully retired. He watches it, wow. But yeah, Jan Dekker will not be featuring on the podcast. So I've got the next best thing, and actually, the timing of it's great because, Connor, we were just talking about Archie Self, someone I know you're very fond of.
Very fond. What a talent. What an absolute talent. I mean, I don't know if you'll remember, Matt, but we when we were in Budapest for the World Masters, I pointed him out then. And he was just constant 180, 174, 177. For someone like quite short in stature because of his age and that as well, he's great on tops. Tops and double five, he rarely misses them. He's an absolutely brilliant player.
Do you know what, Connor? I've thought about that a lot in the past. The shorter players, so Taylor, Gary Anderson's not as tall as everybody thinks he is. They're all brilliant on tops. Is it an advantage being... you're not very tall, are you? How tall are you, Connor?
6'4", 6'5".
Yeah, I think you're about 5'8" or 5'9" or something, a bit like Edgar. But you're good on top, so...
Yeah, my thinking behind it is if you're a little bit vertically challenged, you give it a bit more oomph when you're trying to get to the top of the board, so you don't, like for lower doubles, you know, sometimes you try and place them rather than being aggressive. I think when you're of a shorter stature, you have to be aggressive going for that top side of the board. So I think that's why, like, Darren Webster, for example, shorter than me, not by much, but extremely good at tops.
Maybe it's something to do with the arc, Matt, the arc of your dart. I'm just thinking about it from a physics. If you're lower down, the dart's going to be flattening out by the time it gets at tops. Whereas if you're tall, like Jimmy Van Ski's almost throwing down on tops, you know, the dart's doing weird things. That might be one we have to look at in a future video as to why smaller people are better at tops.
A couple of answers, which are quite interesting, because we're three people that really analyse the game. And one thing that really is interesting to me at the moment is one that I'm kind of researching a little bit. Have you seen Jaden Walker? The 12-year-old who played the Super Series.
102 average against Humphreys recently.
In an exhibition,
Yeah.
The thing about Jaden that's interesting for me is he's 12 and he's the size of a 12-year-old. Now, the angle of which he throws the dart is going to be more upwards. And as he grows, he's going to have to throw with the arc of which the dart travels to the board. How much of a disadvantage is it sometimes for the younger players? Because he's going to have to relearn to throw darts.
I think if you regularly practice when you're a young age, I think you do, you naturally get into that arc and you learn that arc. But if you start young and then you just completely stop, like you see a few players now that played when they were really young and their arms like up here when they start, when they come back to it, like their hand is above their eye level. But if you carry on going and carry on practicing, I think it's just a sort of natural progression as you get taller.
When Luke Humphreys started dropping the weight, he practiced more to accommodate for the changes that his body was going to be making.
Yeah. Same as Phil Taylor when he used to go for the juicing and stuff like that and losing all the weight. You could always tell when he'd just come back into it. I think it was round about the UK Open when he played Aidan Kirk. He'd just come in from losing a lot of weight and you could tell how it affected him where obviously he hadn't been playing as much as he normally would.
The darts were sort of kicking, weren't they, for Taylor? There was kicking like point left, right.
Yeah, all going towards the left. And I think he bust 10 a couple of times hitting a double 12 because his dart kept on kicking over that sort of direction.
That was on a finish that he did it twice back to back. I'm not sure what the finish, whether it was 130 or something. It was something that ended on double five, 130 comes to mind. And he hit the double 12. And then the next throw, he did exactly the same again.
Exactly the same as well.
Yeah. It's one of the moments that sticks. Oh, hello. Oh, Edgar's messing about with buttons then. He's not happy enough that we're all the same size, Connor. So he made himself
for
bigger
a reason.
Then.
Prime time for a reason. Got to have the biggest screen.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, it's great to have you on.
They did.
It really is good to have you on because I haven't chatted to you in ages and you've been playing so well. I've been watching your progress. It's been brilliant.
It's been a while. To be fair, I watch this, like the podcast, every single time it comes out now. It's sort of, it's a practice listen for me now, the podcast. So I'm glad to finally sneak on.
Well, it's definitely one in Suter's playlist because he seems to get a mention every week. I don't know, for one reason or another.
To be fair, he's not your typical dart player, is he? How many things does he do on top of darts? It's a ridiculous amount. Incredible. How he still stays at the level he does, I don't know.
No, it's incredible. It is incredible. So how's the practice going for Ali Pally?
It's going really well. I think I started at, we're at about 12 o'clock now. I started at about 8:30 this morning, maybe slightly before. So I'm picking up my practice, but when it comes around to that week, I'll dull it down a little bit just to make sure my energy and all that's there.
You're quite unique, Connor. I don't want to scare our listeners with your practice routine, but yeah, give us we were talking last week about players that are professional. We were talking about Mickey Mansell. You've heard us ranting him about, and I was saying, you know, he was saying about his job, and I was thinking, well, Connor takes this so seriously. I mean, you really do. So give the viewers and the listeners an idea of what a typical day is for you, Connor.
A typical day for me, I'd normally start my practice at around 9. And that can vary to how I start the practice off. I mean, my manager come up with a good practice routine. So sort of starting the day off, go 61 to 65, then hit a 180, and then 66 to 70, hit a 180. 71 to 75, then hit a 180. So I sort of up in those sort of five brackets, hitting a 180 after, up to say, I think 95, I think is where we normally leave it. But that's how I'd normally start off. That can take half an hour to an hour.
Do you have a break then?
Andy tried that routine like a few weeks ago, and he's still on the first 180.
I'm still doing it. I'm still doing it. Yeah, no, but I mean, is it? Let's have a break after an hour, or do you do 2 hours?
So if I start to feel like my energy sapping a little bit, then I will take like a 10-minute break and things like that. So I do break up. Then about 12 o'clock, I take the dog down to go to the toilet and things. So I break it up in my own little way. So to say I do 8 hours solid practice a day, true and not true, because I do take those minutes out so I don't have an injury and things like that. I mean, I've been known before to start my practice at 7:30 and put my darts down at 7 o'clock in the evening before now, to do those really, really long stints. But I always try and sort of break it up a little bit. Otherwise, I'll end up getting an injury and then there's no point of practicing. So I'll be able to pick up a dart.
Yeah, no, I agree. And obviously you're a young lad and, you know, nice and flexible and everything. But also I'd like to say that you're not a super hard thrower of the dart. So you've got, you know, your follow through's great, but you don't like ram it into the board. So that's going to help you with the longevity. You know, certain players, I was one, I threw it way too hard. So after an hour, my arm's absolutely killing me. And knowing that if I carry on for another couple of hours, I'm going to end up doing something. And there's plenty of those players. We see them on tour. But yeah, the way that you throw and your darts land is obviously going to help. And the fact that I think it's really important for the viewers that you do take those breaks. It's so easy to get in the moment and go 2-3 hours, you know, and Matt knows this better than anybody. And then before you know it, you've ruined the next 2 months because your elbow's gone.
I used to be a nightmare for that. Like I would not, if I was having a good practice session, I was playing well, I didn't want to put my darts down and I wouldn't. But now I'm learning to, okay, put them down. It's still going to be there when you get back after the break. Just take a little break. Otherwise, like you end up with like pains in your calf or your knee or just like silly things where you just stand still for so long. Like it's not always your arm or your shoulder. Sometimes it is like how you're standing, your foot. Like I've got insoles in my trainers to stop things like that. Like all those little things that people don't really think about.
So I
mentioned
podcast question came up there, and you know how when we're talking about things and my mind wanders into a different topic, I literally picked up on one there when Connor was like, when I'm playing well, I wanted to keep going. So we're going to answer now a question.
I was just going to say that exact same thing. I was just going to say that I picked up on the exact same thing.
We're going to say
we know we we're starting finishing each other's sentences soon, Matt. You know what I mean? It's like, but what I was just going to say was, are you a believer?
Let's mute Andy. Let's mute Andy. He's still going. There we go. Let's mute him.
Oh, clairvoyant Cornwall over there.
He's muted, so he's not going to finish my sentences. He's done. Right. So I wish I had this in real life. This would be great. Look, Andy, you can't hear him. It's fantastic. Could do
what are two old fellas called out of the Muppets? The ones that sit up in the thing.
He's trying to speak. He's muted. He can't speak. It's Wayne Mardell. So with that, I put a post out on Twitter a while ago asking people's superstitions. A lot of people went, I can't finish unless I hit a turn. I can't finish unless I hit a 180. Darting superstitions. I'm going to unmute Cornhole because he's now starting to write things down, I think, to put up to the camera.
So, little whiteboard.
Yeah, it won't work because he's got one of those rubbish filters on.
He's drawn a great portrait of Lakeside there.
Oh, it's the Muppets. But yeah, darting superstitions. Now, I've spoke about these before, like, you probably have weird ones on the Pro Tour as well. Like the best one I heard was someone walked in and went, I'm going to have a good day today because when I drove down it, all the lights was green on the traffic lights.
That's strange. I've heard of someone putting their darts in the freezer before they play before.
Stuart Kellett.
Oh, yeah, used to put his darts in the freezer. So like at ad breaks, he'd get a fresh set out of a fridge or something because they were nice and cold. So, yeah, ridiculous.
Hey, Paul Nicholson.
Did he used to do that as well?
It was a game against Paul Nicholson. He put him in the fridge.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Like the temperature being warm.
My superstition is to do with the technique of my throw. Like I pull back and touch my face. That's my sort of biting point. So, but if I don't do that, that dart could go anywhere. So that's my sort of, I try and make sure I touch my face each time. Strange. I poked myself in the eye before. I tried using longer stems. I knew enough to scoop me out.
Don't put point protectors on.
Yeah. That's my only one, I think. That's my only one.
Am I back in now? Can I speak now? Yeah. Oh, thanks for that. Yeah, it was Stadler and Waldorf, the Muppets. So Connor said, you mentioned about practicing when you're playing well. Yeah, but just let me jump in. You've had me muted and I didn't like it at all.
It'll just be me and Connor doing it.
It's a question for both of you going, do you both stop practicing if the practice is going bad and carry on practicing if the practice is going well? That's it. I'll shut up now. Answers, please.
Matt, do you want to go first?
I'll go first then. Okay. So if my practice isn't going well, and I feel I'm not throwing the darts correctly, I will take a break and then come back to it. But if I feel like I'm releasing the darts well, if I feel the technique's fine, then I'll just change up what I'm doing. I'll just change the routine. I'll move to something a bit more board mastery. I'll start shooting around the board rather than throwing into a concentrated area. So I'll change the routine. But if the throw's not right, I'll have a break and come back to it.
If you noticed how quick that answer was, Connor. Yeah.
I'm going to get a prop. 2 seconds.
Hey, we don't normally have props on the channel, do we? This is exciting.
Right. We barely have the cameras on, Andy. Never mind props. Yeah.
I'm going to change my background now.
I haven't used this for a little while now, but at the start of the year, I made a notebook. So if ever I'm struggling with something in practice, I would write it down, like what position my thumb was in, like if it was going well. So if I'm struggling with something, say I'm dragging them left quite a lot or something to that ilk, I'll go through and see, right, last time I had that problem, how did I fix it? Because those, like if I'm tired and I know that's a reason I'm not practicing well, I'll give it a miss. But if there's something I think I can fix, because these situations happen in games and things like that as well. So to have that sort of backup plan, like, because it can happen in like the middle of a match. It can happen in like one of the biggest moments. But to have that written down and you know you've gone through it, you've almost revised what to do in that situation. You almost can't go wrong, if that makes sense. So you know how to fix those things.
Paul Nicholson when he was at his best due to exactly the same thing. And it was one of the things he advised. Certainly if something's going well or you feel something, to make a note and write it down. And the best example I can give that relates to what you're saying is when I first ever got my PDC tour card, I put a message out on Facebook about how I've now got an opportunity to be anything. If I perform, I can be anything. And every year that comes on time hop on Facebook. And when I read that, it puts me into that mindset of actually when it was, 12 years ago now. And I'm thinking, 12 years ago, I said this and thought this. And I'm not that same 12 guy.
Years on, 12 years on, he's doing a podcast with me.
But I always forget how long you was a pro for. It always surprises me every time. Yeah.
2011.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. I was 16. 12 years. No, 13 years ago. 2011. So I would have been 15.
You make me feel old. Andy was a pro, for 3 weeks, weren't you, Andy?
3 months, yeah. 3 months.
I heard he got too good and gave the card back. That's what I heard.
Yeah. That's it, Connor. Yeah, thank you very much. The money's in the post. Money's in the post. Yeah, 4 months. 4 months. Played in one tournament, the UK Open, and a couple of pro tours. That was it. And then, a child came along, and that was a different decision for me to make. But I was old. I mean, I didn't stop playing darts. I was 38, and I was pro by 40. Was it 40, 41? And then gave it up by 42, 43. So, yeah, it was a quite quick thing for me. But
does this mean you're older than Paul Lim?
He's 70, Connor. He's 70, right? Okay, I've got 17 years on him. I'm a sprightly young thing compared to Paul. But I tell you what, I wish I had his head of hair. Because I tell you, 70 years old. I don't know what he eats.
I've got a podcast question come up again here. You know, do we have these chats? I just come up with the questions. So this is probably an answer that has changed over the last 12 months. So if it has changed, give me both versions. What is the ideal peak age of a dart player?
35.
That's what I'd have said.
Okay, so obviously my own circumstances came in my head. It depends when you start. Mm. Because Luke Littler started so young, he's probably going to peak at 25.
Like Adrian Lewis?
Yeah.
You know, started Peter young. Wright peaked in his 40s, didn't he? But started later. I guess, so let's rejig the question. I would say 7 to 10 years after you first pick up a dart. So that then allows for any age.
I'd say 7 to 10 after you start playing high-level darts.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, there's that theory, isn't there? The 10,000 hours over 10 years to achieve excellence in an activity.
Connor's got it in his notebook. Just give him a sec. Connor, go and get that hours notebook.
It says it happened around hour 16,000.
I think you should be the analyst, not the sniper, because you're the for the golf listeners out there, you're the Bryson DeChambeau of darts. You
That's a cool
everything.
Name, but I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's world number three or something. So you know what I mean. But he analyzes everything way beyond what anybody else does. And we talk on the podcast about the extra 1%. You know, the extra little things you can do better than other people. And I think you're invested in that, and I like it.
You got to try. It's like when I come to you for the precision thing, just to find that extra couple of percent. You have to. If you can't find it yourself, you go to outside influences. So you've got to try and find it like here and there.
Yeah.
I've spoken a few times about Connor, and he's going to hear it now, whether he's heard it before or not.
Thank you.
Yeah. the most impressive thing about what Connor does that the other players don't is there's an ignorance about players. You get to a certain level and you believe you're an expert in the field. You never stop learning. You never stop learning. And Connor's one of those people that if he has a question, he tries to find the answer and he'll seek it from a variety of different people. I got to the final of the Welsh Open this year and it finished at 4 o'clock. My game was at 10. The first thing I did was get on the phone to Glenn Durrant because Glenn Durrant mastered that system. And he had the answer to how to do that. I don't know how to do that. I played the UK Open in the afternoon and the evening. I always struggled with playing the two games in a day when you've got to prepare for that intensity. So I was like, straight on the phone to Glenn Durrant. Right, Glenn, what do I do? Tell me what I should do. And it's a key quality that I think breeds success in whatever the field is that you're gonna play in. And Connor's got that.
Yeah, agreed. And it's a really nice little segue, actually, because one thing I wanted to talk about, you know, I like to have a rant every week. Connor, you've listened to the podcast enough now. I like to have a rant. And my rant this week is about players not leaving finishes. So, like, setup player, and you're brilliant at it. Yeah, and that's not because you're on the channel. I've watched you enough. You are brilliant at it. You know everything from, you know, 350 down, what you should be going for to leave a finish. And at Lakeside this week, it drove me insane. Even the guy that won, even Scott who won, was leaving 169, 165. I'm like, is this a joke? Like, this is, you know, all right, it might not be his job. Maybe it becomes his job. But I see it in the PDC as well as the WDF. You know, I see it on Modus. Players not leaving finishes. Now, the game's moved on. Phil Taylor famously didn't leave finishes. He just went at the 20s. I'll just keep it in treble 20 until I pummel you into the ground kind of thing. And he was that damn good that he got away with it. He wouldn't get away with it now. He would not get away with leaving 166 now, and you've left 164, 167, 170. The statistics say it all. Even if you only hit one of those massive finishes, one in 10, well, then you've got a 10% advantage. So there's my little rant, and please, both of you, jump in and tell me about that.
I think there's two reasons why the counting differs. I think for the older player, it's stubbornness a lot of the time. They just refuse to count and just want to hit tons all the time. So it makes life simple. Like, you see players moving round darts in the 20 rather than coming down to the odd numbers to try and keep things simple for themselves. And the other one, I think the saying, no battle plan survives contact with the enemy, comes into it. They know how to do it, but sometimes in a match you get so flustered and sort of in your own head that you forget, oh, that would have left that, that would have left that, where I think that sort of nerves does play a big part in professional counting sometimes. I think some players just get so mixed matched with emotions that they just forget proper counting.
I like the word professional counting. Owen Binks is in my ear, by the way. Whenever Connor's playing, I've commentated on Connor. Owen Binks is always in my ear, and he's like, oh, best counter in the game, best counter in the game. He puts you on par with Jelle Klassen, who he says is ultimately the world's best counter. So that's where he puts in regards to that. But professional counting is a great thing, because actually there's things that you don't consider at a level but you should consider at another level. Like, if we're going to talk now about players at that level that we've just described, if you hit one treble 20, you cannot use the 19s as cover. You can't. It's got to be 17s, because you've got that 3-4-2 leave. You leave 3-4-2, you are 9 darts away from winning the leg. You started 9 darts away from winning the leg. But if you tell that to maybe a county player or a local player, it's not really relevant, because it's where you're playing where the relevancy comes in. So when you get to that international platform, you've got to start using those 17s, or you're going to have to go 19 over to 18. Because you cannot be leaving those shots like the 3-4-2.
It's almost like if you get a trophy for a 180, the counting doesn't count. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you're in those leagues where you're on 180, like 266, but you get a little certificate at the end of the season for a 180. it's one of those.
Yeah, so we are relating this
story here. You got me another podcast sort of story. This is
not letting me speak today. Have you noticed, Connor? You see how excited he is? Right, I'll sit back, Matt. Carry on. Mute me if you want.
This is going to be one of those opportunities where it's like confession hour. So now I'll go first, just see if it's me. When I played local league darts, I used to want to hit the most tons in the league because you've got the trophy at the end of the year. So I'd go 1-0 up. Then I deliberately lose the second leg, so I got a third leg so I could get more tons. And if I was playing someone I knew I was going to be, if I got the treble with the first two dart, I'd go big 20, big 20, so I could get more tons and not go for like a 140, so it like brought the leg down.
Yeah, okay, I've similar. I was trying to get into the county side, and the guy said to me, you need 380 averages. 380 averages, and it gets you in. And I'd got two in the bank, and the next game, I don't know what I'd got left, but I ended up going for the ball when I shouldn't have been going for the ball, just trying to finish the leg early because I knew it'd get me an 83 average. And if I'd gone 18 double 16, I knew it was going to be like a 79. So yeah, similar sort of story. And in my mind, I was like, right, gotta cut. Anyway, I missed the ball. I got in anyway.
No, a league I used to play on a Monday, it was all best of one, the Caterham League, local to where I was. I used to do the Highland Fling across the hockey just to try and get that last treble 20 for a ton. I used to just walk like backwards and forwards to try and find that angle just to squeeze a ton in, like to try and come top of the tons. Always, always, always.
See, so we've all got guilty of something in these little...
Yeah.
We don't want the trophies, but when you're going up, you do, don't you, when you're going up that ladder.
I want to ask Connor about finishing because you have quite a few unique ways, and that's okay. I'm cool with that. That's happening a lot more in professional darts now, is that people have their own ways. But there's one or two finishes, and I have spoken about these in the past, that are quite interesting to me that I'd like both of your takes on, but as we've got Connor on, the first one is 108, and the new way of going is 419s. So you start on the 19s, 419s for 32. Now, I'll tell you why I hate it. I hate it because if you go under the 19, what do you do now? You're doing the Highland Fling on the hockey, trying to find the treble.
The dream dart.
51-38.
51-38 is not a great way of going. So why not start on the 20s that you throw on all the day? You've got 20 treble, double 14. You've got single. You can go treble 16. So that's my first one. And my other one, and the people listening to the podcast that know me will be laughing now because this was the one that I always went on. So for players like me and you, not Matt, because Matt's darts land flat. Players like me and you whose darts pitch up, okay, 78. I go treble 20 first dart every single time. And I'll tell you why. Single 20, I can go 18 tops and I'm not blocked. I am never blocked because the first dart is near the treble. If I go treble 18 and hit single, I'm then going to block my entry to the double top by hitting single 20. Now, Simon Whitlock started doing this on TV and I was texting everybody going, look, I told you. But I've not seen anybody else do it since. So those are my two.
Ball 28 is a good one for that. So like you can go 25, 13 tops. Ooh. Ball's not a bad one because obviously double 9 is horrid.
Yeah.
108, I like doing it in sections. So I'm not switching too far away. And obviously there's the added bonus if you drag it into a 7. Like if you're right-handed, you normally drag left. On the 20s, you drag a 5. 103 can't be done in 2. But obviously 108, if you drag to the left on the 19s, 101, you can do it. Even that low dart, that 19, you can go 51-38, which is still in that little section. You're not going all round. So if you're close, then you're probably going to be quite close on the nearby targets as well.
Matt, see if you both disagree with me. And then I'll just leave you to it.
I'm absolutely baffled as why you'd go treble 20, double 9. You know, the amount of people that I see split double 9, and you're trying to leave it.
They're all the same size, Matt. The doubles are all the same size.
They're the same size, but the context's not the same around them. So,
are you more likely to hit treble 18 or treble 20? You're more likely to hit treble 20. So, therefore, you've got two dots at a double.
No, potentially one.
But yeah, okay, potentially one. But it's the fact, it's not relevant to you. This is not relevant to you because a single 18 to you, 20 and tops is fine. To me and Connor, 20 and tops is a nightmare because that first dart, no matter what you do, I know there's even players now trying to throw it differently. I know Daryl Gurney does, Luke Littler does. They're
Andy
trying
Hamilton
to throw the dart
throws a small 20 under the treble.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's just, yeah.
I go bottom wire. Bottom wire of tops, sort of similar to Luke Humphreys, bottom wire of tops, and I can still use that flight as a marker for tops. if I give it enough.
Oh, and if you go in tops, you can go double 10. I don't mind that. Yeah, I don't mind that. Yeah, it's when you seem to aim at big 20, it always sits up and you're like, oh, God, now what do I do? I know certain people can throw it over the top and that sort of thing. It's just always been my take. We all have our own, you know, idiosyncratic ways. We're all a little bit, you know, about stuff. And I know you are, Connor. You've got some weird and wonderful ways. Have you got any weird and wonderful ways, Matt? I've not seen you play enough to know whether you do go anything weird. Like, I don't imagine you go 16 double 10 on 36, do you? Don't get me started on that.
Right, I was on the lakeside stage for about 9 minutes the other day. You're like, it's a great time to watch me.
I went and made a brew. I come back. Next game was on.
It was quite quick, wasn't it? Do you know what? I never normally go like things like double doubles. And then for some reason in that game, I think I went double 14, double 18, double 16, double top. And I'm like, why am I doing this? I never do this sort of stuff. So,
Only against subscribers.
But it's just one of those sort of heat of the battle things, I guess, isn't it? Like, you just get drawn into the moment and you just do different things. The game plan changes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about Lakeside, Connor, I know you had a decision to make, didn't you? Because
I've got to go. I'm going. We're not talking about Lakeside. I'm off.
Yeah, no, you had to choose between the two, and you chose the PDC, the Ali Poly, which is great, fantastic, and, you know, got your tour card now. It's amazing. I'm sure you watched it. I'm sure you watched some of it, or if not all of it. I've got a take on the crowds. Loads of people are kicking off about the crowds were awful, and I was there in person, and they were, other than Matt, who played Saturday night, he's like, whoa, the place is full. They've all come to see me. No, Matt, it's Saturday night. That's why they're here. On the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it was pretty quiet. It really was. There was like 80 people in on afternoon session and stuff. So my thought would be, why not just make it a bit shorter now? You know, it doesn't need to be 9 days. Make it a bit shorter and compact it a little bit, and you know, even if you go straight through from afternoon straight through to night, I don't know. What do you guys think? How do you get it back to being the right atmosphere again?
I think the players can make a big difference to getting people in the venue. I mean, if you turn around and said to the crowd, for example, Phil Taylor's going to be coming in to play in one of the sessions, the crowd will probably be packed. I do think the more the WGF stop losing players to the tour card system and things like that, and you get the same familiar faces, people like watching certain faces, you'll probably get a more regular crowd. Like, I think there was one person that was in the crowd this Lakeside that has been going for like the last 15 years or something silly. So you do get, I think Lakeside fans are more a reliable darts fan. So if you get those familiar faces, then the crowd should pack out. Like Paul Lim, people will go back next year if Paul decides to play again, just to watch Paul. And that's what will happen.
Maybe we've lost some legends from it, Matt. You know, Martin Adams and the Glenn Durant and the Ted Ankies of this. You know, those kind of familiar faces that have all now gone.
Characters.
Nobody else has. Yeah, the characters.
And I'll put some of that down to social media as well, because as much as social media is a great product, it also stops people being a character because it gives people the chance to instantly judge you. Now, I look at this differently because I've got a very different thought pattern on this. I don't care if someone wants me to lose because I still think I'm winning when that happens. If someone celebrates my defeat, you cared about my match enough to want an outcome. So my job as an entertainer in that has been completed. My job as a sportsman hasn't, but my job as an entertainer has. So everyone who's like, well, I'm so glad Matt lost, I'm like, I'm winning because you care. You're going to tune in to watch my game because you want me to lose as much as someone wants it to win. Now, I get that not a lot of people have that and people struggle to get in that mindset and they take a lot of the criticism or the negativity to heart. And with that, will hold themselves back. And essentially, all we get now is, oh, isn't he a gentleman? That's the conversation everyone wants to try and be involved in, where actually there's a very rare few that are willing to go, I'm just going to have fun. And if you like me, you like me. And if you don't, you don't. But the people that like having fun the way I have fun are going to gravitate to me. And that is ultimately going to be what I surround myself with. And I don't think there's enough people, certainly at that sort of off the pro tour, international amateur-y sort of level, who have the confidence to be themselves.
You mentioned being a gentleman there, Matt, and that made me think of some of the great question for Connor to find out, like, where you are with regards to, it's almost becoming a bit lovey-dovey on stage at the PDC now. Somebody hits a big finish and they're fist bumping and there's good shot, mate, and they're patting them on the back and there's kisses and cuddles at the end. Adrian Lewis started all that, of course, the kisses and cuddles. But are you – I was never like that. I wanted to get, you know, I was Gerwin Price. I'd get a hit a 164, get in, you know, like you know, it's fired me up.
I played Ross at the Grand Slam not long ago, and I it was a game that I was not prepared to play. Ross likes to fire himself up and get quite aggressive, like for himself to make sure he plays well. And it sort of seeped into me a little bit. And I've not really played a game like that before. So after the game, I gave the biggest wet lettuce handshake I've ever given. And I got so much stick on social media for it that when I think a few weeks later, I played Dirk in the quarters, lost. And then I had loads of people, because I conducted myself better, loads of people saying, oh, he conducted himself really well in that tight game and stuff like that. But those are the same people that a week ago were like, oh, he's such a bad loser. I do. For me, the kisses and cuddles at the end of stuff depends on how the game has been played. Yeah. If it's been like, wow, that was a great game, mate, like win or lose, like you're just happy to be involved in that sort of game, then it's a bit different to, I was rubbish and you wasn't much better, but you still won. It gives you a bit of taste in your mouth, and then the kisses and cuddles and stuff don't happen.
What about in the game? Are you a fan of the fist bump? Yeah, good shot, mate. Yeah, nice checkout. Or are you, no, I'm doing my own thing. I'm not really not interested
always.
In what you're doing.
I think I gave Martin a fist bump when he was on for the nine against me at the Players. But other than that, unless it's like a ridiculously good shot, I don't really pay much attention. I don't really watch my opponent either. I try and sort of zone out if I can.
I hate it.
Yeah, I do.
Again, let's go back to my game at Lakeside, because Jarno Bottenberg.
You've talked about it longer than you were on stage.
I know, yeah, crazy. Every time he hit a 180, he's pointing at his people, he's holding up the hockey, he's doing all these things, which actually, when I watched it back, you don't always see. But he was a little tool at times, like he was getting on my nerves, and he's winding me up. And then when I've won the leg, I'm then pointing at his followers. I'm looking at him. Then I'm getting in with the crowd. And that's all the heat of the battle. And then the second the game's over, it's gone. It's done.
Yeah.
Shake hands. We went backstage. We had a drink and we had a big brief. I wished him all the best. I said he was a dark horse for the event. I thought he may have gone on and won it. I said before the draw even came out, I'm like, he's a dark horse. You don't want it. And then I'll win the game. But when the game was on, the longer that game got, the more heated it would have got, the more interaction there would have been. But the second the game was over, it's like football, isn't it? Like you're on the pitch, you're around, winding everybody up, you're having, and then as soon as the whistle goes, all right, mate, you're having a beer afterwards, we're having a sandwich in the clubhouse, you know, and it's done. Like it gets left on the stage. And I think I'd like to see it a little bit more.
Have you noticed that the person that starts those, I wouldn't say antics, but those sorts of controlling, like the emotions of the match, those are the people that normally win the match in the end as well? The person who starts that off normally ends up winning the match. Yeah, they're controlling the pace, they're controlling the emotion of the match. As soon as they get that, then they're extremely difficult to beat. I think Phil Taylor was one of the best ones of stopping that. Yeah. But
yeah, he was. It's hard to stop because the other person's buzzing. They've hit a big finish. Their adrenaline's flowing. They're like, the next three is going to be a 180 because I'm so into it now. And then you're trying your best behind you. Can't seem to get on top of them. Yeah, you're right. And especially in the short formats, you know, they go 2, 3, 4 up and you're just chasing all the time. And they just look to be getting more and more confident and more fist bumps. And and the chasing bit is that's really tough. It is. I mean, we can't finish on Lakeside really without mentioning the mission boards, which were on stage and stood up very well. I thought, yeah, one behind you there, and I thought stood up really well. You got a little bit of criticism. Every board does. You're never ever gonna have games when there's no bounce outs, when there's no darts on the floor, I'm afraid. But I thought there was a lot fewer than last year. Because I can remember watching it last year and all the time people trying to find the dart. Me and Matt talked about this last week in the light where they have that light shining up. They're trying to find the darts. It had bounced out. So I think the mission boards held up well nice to see. Really nice to see them there on the stage and on the TV. A lot of people, by the way, Matt, got lost on the Friday, me included, when it switched from YouTube to Blaze. Even though I knew it was coming, I kind of thought it was going to be on both. And I was like, yeah. Oh, the YouTube feed's finished. And I saw loads of people commenting going, where's the world's gone? What's happened? So I don't think they got that across well enough to people. Right, you need to now watch the rest on the app. So that could have been communicated better.
I think they needed to do that in comms. On that final session, when people were watching, they needed to say it in comms a bit louder. Like, I think I was watching the Modus channel the other day, and Scott Mitchell turned around and said about the Pluto TV and how to get onto Pluto. Yep. And that's what you need. Every now and again, just show how simple it is to do.
Yeah.
And then people will transfer. Because I noticed that it was going to be on Blaze, and it's just an app on the TV or on your phone. It was simple to follow from there.
So simple,
But if you don't know, you don't know.
So as a commentator, you do have to be repetitive. Some commentators don't like doing it, but it depends on the product you work on. So, for example, if I was to work on a European tour, it's purely the game that's in front of you, because you see that game once. Game that's in front of you, talk it through, explain that journey of that story and the player. But if you're doing something like the Super Series, your viewership is going to dip in and out. Not many people will go on the Super Series and watch it from start to finish every day. You'll dip in and out throughout the day, or you'll be following a player and you go, oh, he's on again in 45 minutes. I'll go off and I'll come back in 45 minutes. So you dip in and out. So with that, you have to be repetitive, because you're not always talking to the same audience all the time, where with a more broadcasted event, you do. You tend to find, if I'm going to sit down and watch the World Match Play, I'm going to sit down and watch the World Match Play. I'm not going to go, well, I'll watch game one and game four. I'm not bothered about the middle game so much. You sit down and you watch the night. So how you present that does have to be different depending on the product you're working on. So, yeah, I think Lakeside would be very similar. I think people would be dipping in and out rather than going, I'm going to sit down and watch Lakeside tonight.
That's on an app. But as soon as something's on like an app like YouTube, dipping in and out is just part and parcel. But if you're on Sky for like the Match Play of the Worlds, you do sort of sit there and just get enthralled in it, and you sit there for ad breaks and everything. But as soon as something's in your hand and it's easy to flick in and out, it's what you do all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Just talking about yourself, Connor, and you're not, we spoke then about getting the crowd going and everything. I wouldn't say you're the most animated player. There's certainly way more. And we're all different. We're all different for different reasons. You're probably getting more animated as you're getting more stage time and everything else. Gary Anderson said last week he'd rather play Pro Tour than on stage. He hates the stage. He loves the Pro Tour. And I thought, that's a weird thing to say. Surely you're playing the Pro Tour for the chance to get on the stage. Or am I missing something? What's your take on that?
Yeah, Gary's sort of been there, seen it, done it. There's no more new experiences for Gary now. But to sit on a table at a Pro Tour with your friends, being able to have that discussion and things like that, I think that's where sort of his heart lies now. Do you know what I mean? But there's no new experiences for him on the TV anymore. That's that. But for someone like me that's fairly new to the pro side of it, I can't wait for Ali Pally. I mean, last year against Kachuk was probably the most animated I've ever been, because I just felt I was buzzing from that occasion.
It's got to be a buzz. The crowd are singing your name. The people want your autographs. They're all there to watch you. If you're not getting a buzz out of that, you're in the wrong spot. Somebody famously said, if at high level sport you're not a little bit nervous, there's something that then you're not ready to play, because you need a little bit of that inside, a bit of that tingliness, you know, that wow, look at this kind of thing.
I think you mentioned that.
Yeah, Matt mentioned that last week. You were too relaxed, Matt, weren't you? You were too relaxed for the occasion. And you do need sometimes just a little bit of that nervous energy. So, yeah, looking forward to that, Connor. Looking forward to seeing you and seeing how far you can go at Ali Pali. It's really exciting. Really exciting.
You've got Ben Robb.
Yep.
Canadian?
American? Canadian? Where's Australian. He from? No, New Zealand.
Yeah. New Zealand, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Right. Yeah, New Zealand.
Australian/New Zealand, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, last question over for you then, Connor, before we let you, because we disturbed your practice massively today. World champion 2025. Who is it?
You can't say yourself.
Oh, do you know who I'd really like to see win it? This is going to be out of left field. Peter Wright.
Okay.
Wow.
In your section as well, I believe.
I think he is. But for like a bit of... Ali Pali was like, when he was in form, that was his sort of place. Do you know what I mean? He was so, so good there. I'd love to see him win it again. I would. Obviously, the whole thing is there's not many players on the planet better than the two Lukes at the minute. So,
yeah.
A sort of by the book answer would be one of those, but for someone that I'd really like to see win it, it would be Peter or Gary.
So who's your dark horse? Because me and Matt have had a go at this. We've kind of had a go at who's your dark horse. Without the two, we both said the two Lukes are in form, and everybody else appears not to be. So it's probably the most wide open it's ever been. But other than yourself, if you were going to pick somebody, I think I went for Wessel. I'm not sure you went for now, Matt. But who do you think? Who've you seen playing well, thinking, oh, he's playing well at the minute?
I'm trying to think of his name. He beat Hian last year, one of the Asian qualifiers, hit a lot of 180s. Is it Goto?
Yeah.
Goto. Yeah. If he finds his doubles in the first, like, sort of three darts, he is going to take some stopping. I'm not sure who he's got. I've not really looked at the draws. Obviously, there's a lot of people in the event I'd like to do well, but from someone completely out of left field, let's say Goto.
Are you somebody that looks at the draw or not? Do you look at who you might have in round three?
I'll look at my draw, but I won't look much further. Like, I know who I'd have if I was to go and win.
Yeah,
a few games.
It all goes according to plan. Yeah.
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 Well, thanks for your time, Connor. Anyway, it's been great having you on.
It really has.
Had a few questions. We've not done any of them because, like, normally with the podcast, we have what we're going to do, and then we just go off on a tangent.
Yeah. And guys, get subscribing because I didn't even know Connor was coming on today. So Matt surprised me as well. You could be surprised as to who could appear on the Mission Podcast. So make sure you're subscribed. And, thanks for your time, Connor. Get back on that board, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Thanks for having me. I will do. Catch you later.
See you in a bit.
Catch you later.
So there's one surprise for you. I did try Jan Dekker. It didn't work, like we
said.
That
was brilliant, Matt. Thank you.
But yeah.
It really was.
We've got enough time to do the one thing we said we was going to do at the start of this podcast.
Okay.
Is Lakeside a world championship?
Oh.
Right, you give me yes or no, then I'll give you a long answer and then you can come back at it.
All right, I'll give you my one sentence answer.
Yeah.
It's the World Amateur Darts Championship.
Okay. I will give you my answer. Of course it's a world championship. Of course it is. Now, the reason for that is it is a worldwide tour with countries hosting events. What do you want to call it? It's a collection of a ranking system that is ran worldwide using a worldwide tour. It's the championship of the best players of that tour. Now, are they the best players in the world? No, absolutely not. But that doesn't mean it's not a world championship. Now, should it not be a world championship because there's a private promotions company that also run a world championship that run it better? They shouldn't change the name of their title based on the fact that, now with that in mind, let's say Saudi Arabia come along tomorrow and say in January we're going to host a world darts championship, it's £5 million to the winner, Luke Littler, Michael Van Gerwen, Luke Humphries, they all go, whoa, we're going there. £5 million to the winner? We're going there to a 16-man tournament. World, does that mean that Ali Pali is no longer the world championship? Because the best players aren't there.
Yeah, you're making a fantastic point. And as always, we come from different angles on this. And so for me, and people are probably sick of my sporting analogies by now because of I love an analogy. But if I look at other sports like golf and tennis, et cetera, they have world amateur championships, okay? And the people that win them usually go on to be professional in that sport. So it's like a breeding ground. Now, this is the way that I see, and we've spoken about this before, this is the way that I see this now. If you're traveling or if you want to find out, can I cut it? Can I play darts? I played county. Can I play? Obviously, you've got the PDC and Modus, but it's not that easy to get on either of those. So you might go, well, I'm going to go to the Welsh Open. Oh, I've done really well. I've got to semifinals. Right. I'll go to the English Open. I've done really well. Now I'm getting a few ranking points. Right, I'll go to the Swiss Open or the Denmark Open or whatever. All these people from all over the world on this tour are trying to qualify for the World Championships, but I don't believe any of them are making a living. Now, if they're not making a living at darts, to me, they're not professional. So it's not the World Professional Darts Championship. It's the World Amateur Darts Championship. That's my take.
But it's not World Professional Darts Championship, it's World Darts Championship, which is a collection of that event. Now, the problem you've got, this is where people are getting mistaken with this, is because you're thinking of a lineal progression of the sport, not the organisations. You're thinking, this is darts. This is not darts, this is Organisation A, Organisation B, Organisation C. It's not a continuum where all these promotions work together. If that was the case, I'd get it. But you're then going to go to an organisation who's run a tournament for 48 years and say, you've got to rename it now because someone else has come along to do it. Now, Mission's best-selling dart, you sit there and go, this is our best-selling dart. And I go, well, that can't be the best-selling dart because Target do this dart, which has sold three times more than that, so that's not your best-selling dart. And you go, no, that's our best-selling dart. Just because it doesn't sell better than that doesn't mean it's not a best-selling dart. And they go, no, it can't be a best-selling dart. So I absolutely agree it's a world championship, but what weight does that world championship carry? Nowhere near as much, if in the modern world, much at all. But
yeah.
What does, but it can't not be a world championship because you've had the Hungary Open, the Swiss Open, the Welsh Open, all these different opens. What are you going to call it? Oh, this is the collective championship. This is the end of season awards. You know, what are you going to do? It is a worldwide tour that has a worldwide tournament paid off based on the best players within that system. Just because the best players within that system aren't as good as the other organization doesn't mean that they're not allowed to call it what they want to call it. So it is a world championship. It's just not as weighty as...
And it's the irony, Matt, the irony is, if you've got a PDC tour card, it's a damn sight easier to qualify for the PDC World Championship than it ever is for the WDF.
Which isn't a worldwide tour.
Yeah, you are literally traveling. I did Iceland, Denmark, Norway, Switzerland, Holland, Belgium, Poland, France. I mean, there was probably only about three tournaments in Great Britain, you know, Northern Ireland. And it's like, it goes on and on and on. The PDC, you're playing Pro Tours at Wigan, at Barnsley. Do well in them, you're in the World Championship. So that's the irony of it, isn't it?
The event should not dictate what the system is. The system is a worldwide tour with a world tournament payoff. The standard of it should not dictate that system isn't valid in what it does. It's just the weight of it isn't there. Like Shane McGurk's won it. He played very, very well. What does that mean for him? He's got 50 grand. He's got a title. He's got history and, you know, a great title there. But does that mean now that he's regarded as one of the best players in the world? No, he finished 32 on the Challenge Tour. You know, is he going to be a favourite to go to Q School? I don't know if he is a favorite. He might he'd be someone people look at, but is he someone that you go, oh, he'll definitely get a card because he's won that way years ago. If someone won that, there was almost a certainty at Q School to get through. So, yeah, it's not as weighty as a system, but is it a world championship? You can't say it's not. Because if you're going to say it's not a world championship, what is it then? Because it is a it is a worldwide tour that has its top players of an order of merit play for it. So what is it? And if you're if you say, oh, it's an amateur title, yes, it is an amateur title, but it doesn't mean that that has to be the title of it. This is an amateur championship, yeah, off the worldwide tour. And then you let's say, then if Saudi Arabia come along and put tournaments on, do the PDC go, right, we're not the World Professional Darts Championship no more? They are. Like, where does the torch get passed? Like, what's the criteria?
Yeah. No, I think you've made fantastic points there. I think, you know, we are in agreement with all that. It's just, where does it go from here? You know, I mentioned very briefly when Connor was on about, you know, do they shorten the amount of days it is to get more
crowds? I think they have already. I think the afternoons on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday have gone.
To me, does it move to a different venue? I know that'd be really, you know, get in the comments below, that'd be really controversial. But it's right down south. It's a pain to get to for a lot of people. You know, if it was in the middle of the country, would it be a lot easier to get to?
I think if you move to Assen in Holland, get big crowds. If you go to Germany, you're going to get big crowds. Go to Belgium, you're going to get big crowds. But I think if you move away from the venue, I think the venue's bigger than the tournament.
That's fair. Everyone knows it as the Lakeside World Championship, Frimley Green.
When they put it to the O2, flopped. You know. Yeah. So I think if you move it from the venue, you lose the appeal of the event because it's not the same trophy. If it's not the same trophy, not in the same venue, it'll feel like a different tournament. And if you lose the history and the heritage of that event, you're not left with a lot.
Yeah. It's one of the comments that we've had. Morris McWayne 8470 has put, the WDF are the only ones who think the WDF are any good. The first 4 days of the competition had about 100 people in attendance. I think the end is in sight.
Very incorrect comment. Because the first 4 days, the Friday had about 600. Yeah. Saturday was sold out. Sunday had about 800. So yeah, when the first 4 days is ignored the first seven sessions or whatever it was.
Yes.
So, but yeah, the afternoon sucked, I agree.
It was frustrating because I was there, Matt, and you had...
I don't agree with that either because a lot of the people that are involved in the WDF don't think it's good. Certainly the players. It's a means to an end to be able to play and be in an environment. Certainly on my part of view with that.
David Murphy, 2260, has simply put, is he returning? And you know who that question's aimed at.
I think this is a good place to
end. Because I'm not returning, so
this is a good place to end. So Connor, who's on a moment ago, has been on my case saying I can't stop. Ryan Searle's been on my case saying I can't stop. Many people have sent me messages. I saw Chris Mason last night, and he was like, "You can't end it like that, Matt. Like you can't. Like you owe yourself a little bit more than that." My biggest debate is, if I try it again, could I play better? I don't know. Depends how the nerve is in my arm, because that is the big problem here. It stops me from practicing, it stops me from playing. Going into Lakeside, I played one tournament in 3 months, and that were the World Masters. So time's not good for me. But I was sat there and I was debating it. Do I just try? Do I just sort of see? And I got followed by John Cena. On the day I'm sat there debating it, John Cena, the actual John Cena, whose tagline is never give up. This is an A-list star. This is one of the biggest names, if not the biggest name in wrestling history. And I walked out in wrestling inspired clothing to this event. And then John Cena follows me. My mind's already ticking about the story I could tell if I went back there. not only that the John Cena followed, but the story of John Cena was very similar when he lost to The Rock and he was sat on the stage and he had a year of redemption. And, you know, there's so much there. There's a story and a journey to tell, and I'm all about the story. I love the story. So right now I'm going to enjoy Christmas and I'll make a decision in January.
Yeah, and I hope you make the right one for yourself either way. You know, selfish Andy wants you to have more time available to spend with me doing stuff like this. I'm well aware how difficult it is, and I'm not sure people at home are quite as aware. You can't keep turning up for tournaments at weekend having had no practice. You can't turn up for tournaments having had an injury. You're just going to spend money and you're going to get nothing back. Now, I know full well, if you go to everything for the next 2 years, you'll qualify again. So qualifies, it's not going to be an issue. And I'm not being disrespectful, you're an 80s to 90s average man, and that's enough. Okay, that's enough. If you said to me, "Oh, I've had a change of heart, I'm going to Q school," I'd be like, "Matt, are we on the same page here? I think that ship has sailed," and you'd be the first to admit that. Could you go and win a Modus? I don't know. Maybe you could. There's other things that could be your swan song. It doesn't have to be another 2 years hard graft, injury prone, traveling the world, spending a fortune. There are other, and I'm sure you've thought about some of these. There are other ways to have a swan song.
The other thing is, I don't know how much I want it, because that's the other thing. Like, people still judge me as a dart player, and in my mind, I'm not a dart player. I'm someone who plays darts because my friends are all in darts, because I've been around darts my entire life. I'm someone who plays darts because I enjoy it. I'm not someone who's a serious player who's trying to chase and achieve something. And I think that's quite tricky at times as well, because I think sometimes I feel like I'm misleading people who don't get that, who are like, "Oh, I want to support, or I want to back you in this," or do. And it's like, that's not what I'm trying to achieve here. Like, I'm not trying to achieve great. I'm not trying to win titles. Yes, if I win them, great, but it's not my driving force. But yet people watch you with that psychology that's the driving thing. And it's like, so when I'm not on the same wavelength of the people all the time that are watching what I'm doing. And with that, I don't want to mislead people either. So I think authenticity is vital.
I've been authorized to say there's a place in our Super League team for you anytime you're free. We'd love to have you. I know it's a fair triple. Yeah, just imagine we come on the podcast the following week, we've won 8-2 and the two was me. No, I can't see that happening, but watch this space for more on that from Matt. If we're wrapping up the podcast, are you in the club? It's 18 episodes now. Have you listened or watched them all?
17.2.
And joined the club. And yeah, brilliant surprise for me today having Connor on. Lot of respect for Connor. I hope he does really well. I hope his form takes him through Christmas at the Ali Pali. And now you got me thinking, who's going to be on next week?
It won't be Andy. Yeah. Okay.
No,
tried.
It won't.
We tried. But,
yeah. Thanks everyone for listening again. And don't forget, 7 o'clock now, Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, Sundays, 7 o'clock for your fix of me and Matt and the first video this week about the little coaching series that we've put on has done very, very well. So that's Monday nights for the next few weeks, a series of me and Matt helping you with your game. So make sure you're tuned in for that and subscribed. Thanks for your time as always, buddy.
Talk soon.